Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thank you so much for listening to the pod today. We have sports media columnist Andrew Marchand from the New York Post, and we go around the horn and discuss a slew of sports media news items, everything from ESPN firing Paul Pierce to the Kirk Herbstreit blasting of Dan Orlovsky on Twitter to whether Ian Eagle or Jim Nance should call the NCAA Tournament Final Four to Jim Nance's new contract and a few other topics, Charles Barkley, NFL doing away, ESPN doing away with the opening Monday doubleheader. So we cover a lot of stuff on this podcast with Andrew Marchand. Before we get to it, just a quick reminder. If you missed it last week, you're a WWE fan. We got WrestleMania this weekend. Edge, who's in the main event against Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan, was on the pod last week. 2 weeks ago, Scott Van Pelt from ESPN. So check those out if you missed them and subscribe to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. All right, here we go. A little sports media news potpourri with Andrew Marchand of the New York Post. All right, joining me now, SI Media Podcast regular. Hasn't been on though since January, went and checked, so we got to catch up on a lot of sports media news. Covers all sports media columnist, reporter for the New York Post, Andrew Marchand. Andrew, how's it going?
I'm well. How you doing, Jimmy?
I'm well, too. And it's been a good run here for sports and sports media in terms of like news and having, you know, when you look back a year ago, it's pretty remarkable. We went 3-4 months without anything. And now it doesn't feel normal still because you have, you know, events with fans not in the stands or a few fans in the stands. But in terms of the calendar, I mean, we're coming off the tournament. We're coming off, you know, we got the Masters coming up, opening day. So feels like some normalcy back with the sports world, at least.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think we're all kind of feeling that in our lives, too, as we get these vaccines rolled out and hopefully cases keep going down and we can get back to normalcy and, you know, see ballparks full outside of Texas, you know, when it's safe everywhere. Yeah, I think you're going to see that. And, you know, the world's going to change a little bit. It's not going to go back to how we were. I'm talking about sports media and in general. But I do think we could get back to a little bit more to what we knew pre-COVID.
Yeah. And I mentioned the NCAA tournament. We're taping this Tuesday afternoon. So we're just coming off of the final with Baylor and Gonzaga. So let's start there just to put a bow on it, because you wrote a column last week where you opined that Ian Eagle should be handling the Final Four and the finals for CBS over Jim Nance. No chance that ever happens, right? Given that Nance just re-signed a big deal, he's not giving that gig up.
I don't know if there's no chance that ever happens. I don't know. You know, I could see that happening at some point. I don't think it's no chance. I mean, he has, I mean, history would
no
say
chance,
no.
It's, no chance
it's
for
been
a while.
30 years.
No chance yeah, for a been, while.
Yeah, it's been 30 years that Jim has been doing it. So history would say no, but I could see them. I don't think it's out of the question, quite honestly. I mean, he doesn't really do, I mean, you look at his basketball schedule. He does the Big Ten and he does the tournament. He's not, I mean, that was kind of the overall point. He's not ingrained in basketball. He, you know, it's kind of a drive-by, and I think you kind of can hear it in the calls. And so, you know, he's not bad, but your point is well taken. He has been doing it for 3 decades.
The bigger issue for me, and listen, I'm not going to sit here and say I watched a ton of the tournament. That would be a lie. But when I do tune in, it has nothing to do with Grant Hill. It's just I have this thing with all sports. When there's three people in the booth, it just seems so close, especially in basketball where you have very little time to get in what you have to. I mean, it's not like baseball where you have a minute in between every pitch. Basketball, three people with, you know, I've said this with the NBA too, with Breen, Van Gundy, Jackson. It's not about the people. It's just about, it's just way too cluttered.
Well, Raftery is very dominant. I know you're a huge Raftery guy, and I like him a lot. But he's very dominant. He's very quick after the call, to get in there with his points and his sayings. I think we saw a different Grant Hill earlier, or heard a different Grant Hill earlier when he worked with Ian Eagle. which I thought was a big thing. You know, where I hadn't heard Grant Hill sound as good as he did. He sounded like a number one analyst. The energy, I mean, he is Grant Hill. He sounded like he was having fun. You don't really feel that. In some respects, it's good because he does, he's a good guy. He seems like, at least Grant Hill, and he's not like trying to fight. Like, I need to get my 2 cents. And even on that final call, Raftery gets in there with his onions and the kiss. And, you know, Grant Hill, you kind of heard a little bit, but he took a step back. And a lot of times in a three-man, and this is the issues with three-man booths, is that, you know, people are trying to get their words in, and Hill doesn't do that, so that helps it. But Raftery is very dominant. So, yeah, I tend to agree, I think. And especially if you don't work a lot together. I mean, they're just picking it up at the Big Ten tournament, and they've done it a few years now. But it's hard when you don't have that chemistry going in and out that you really need in a three-man, and is very difficult to pull.
I say this with the NFL, and the same holds true with college basketball. CBS is in very good hands, though, from a play-by-play standpoint. When you can trot out Nance, Ian, Harlan, Nestler, it's pretty strong roster for the tournament, at least. So, you know, analysts are always going to be the ones that get, maybe fans give the play-by-play guys more shit because they're speaking the most, but it's the analysts who, I think, for me, who annoy me more than play-by-play people. But that's just a personal thing that I'm throwing out there.
Yeah, I think it depends. I mean, look, I think, and I don't like to be this negative, I do think the first job of an announcer is not to annoy, right? Like, I know that sounds very negative, but, like,
that's,
you just
true,
don't want to, yeah, it's like an umpire. You don't want the person to annoy you and really kind of ruin the game for you. And there are some who can do that.
Sunday Night Baseball. If they're,
yeah, you're not a huge fan of that crew. You know, Alex, I find humorous, but yes, he can. He's about three innings of material each week. And then, you know, that he's got saved up. Not that spontaneous. So I don't, that's the first thing, is you don't want to annoy. So that comes down to style. And especially in basketball, it seems like, I think, when you think of the Vitals, the Raftery's, when, you know, Gus Johnson is a play-by-play guy, there are people who have some pretty strong personalities in there that you can either love or hate, depending on your point of view on these people. Bill Walton's a big one. Sorry, I just wanted to mention him, too.
I don't know how anyone could not like Bill. I mean,
well, if you are, here's the thing. So, yes, I agree. Bill, he's very entertaining. But if you're a huge fan of a team and you're trying to watch a game,
right.
That's where I could see that. I could see some people not enjoying that. He's very funny. He's obviously older now, so it's endearing. It's a good shtick. That said, if you're really into a game, your team is playing, and you just want to watch the game and just get a little analysis instead of like a sideshow, I could see somebody not liking that.
I'm about to piss off all the people who tell me that I talk about New York stuff too much on the podcast, but the Walton thing reminds me a lot of my heroes, Ma and Pa. Like, you either get it or you don't. You either like entertainment and you like to be entertained and have characters, or you're a deranged sports fan who thinks it's so important you need to know every single thing that's going on because, you know, you can't figure it out yourself. So the Walton thing to me is like John and Susan. Like, you got to just enjoy it, and either you get it or you don't.
I agree, and I,
like,
do,
like, people
enjoy,
get mad that, like, John, you know, might get the, like, get the count wrong. Okay, you'll survive. It's
well,
a meaningless regular season baseball game.
You know,
you'll survive.
Here we go. I'll bring up a point that kind of got a little traction on Twitter. Like, the Adam Morrison call on Gonzaga, right? Some people liked it, some people didn't. My point is, it was understandable. I could have done one yay, like, whatever he said, one yes, or whatever, when he went crazy, and then lay out and let the play-by-play guy have his moment. Because the thing is, people are listening to that now on social media. You know what happened. You see the play. In theory, you're listening to that and you're not watching the game. It's on radio. It's audio. Maybe you're listening to it a different way. And so you do want to know. So I do enjoy John and Susan. I covered the Yankees for a decade, so I got to know him a little bit better. And, you know, John is such a character. He's very endearing when you're around him. And so I can enjoy it because it's just hilarious.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If you're a diehard, there are diehard Yankee fans. I can understand their point. They want
get
to know
life.
What's happening.
Yeah, get a life. It's not that important.
But
let me just push back.
You can't tell these people, we do this for a living. You're going to tell these people to get a life. They want to hear what's going on in the Yankees.
If your life is affected by the fact that John says it's 3-1 instead of 3-2 on a July 18th game against the Royals, get a life.
No, I really do enjoy Sterling, so I don't want to sound like I'm negative towards him. But I can understand you're in your car, it's high, it's far, it's popped up the short. That could be a little bit. If you're a diehard Yankee fan,
your life will survive John messing up a flyball.
I mean, you survive any of this. I mean, yeah, I love.
Right.
Well,
that's
John
the whole
overall.
Point, right? That's. The
I
point.
Like John overall, but I could see how someone wouldn't. I mean, I think it's very understandable.
The thing about the Morrison thing, and you know this though, if that was another analyst, I might agree with you there where you got to lay out on radio. But because he was a Gonzaga player, I can't criticize the guy for losing his mind. It was, and here's the thing about it.
I didn't criticize him either. I said it was understandable.
Yeah, yeah.
Just for the
and it was authentic. That's what, to me, that's what's most important. It wasn't canned. It wasn't planned. It was very authentic. So I thought the Morrison thing was great, knowing, you know, he was obviously a huge, huge player for Gonzaga. We mentioned Nance. You've been on this saying he has re-signed with CBS, but he didn't get the Tony Romo money he wanted. Do you have any insight into whether those negotiations were tense? Are both sides happy? Is one side maybe not as happy? Where do we stand with all that?
Yeah, from my understanding, and I kind of wrote it throughout, is that there was a big difference of opinion of Nance's worth in the wake of Tony Romo's contract. You know, Nance's side clearly thought, when you look at Romo only working the NFL season, Jim Nance, we just mentioned, for three decades, has been the face of CBS. He does the NCAAs, he does the Super Bowl, and of course, he's an all-timer in golf. So they looked at value in comparison. And I think at one point they felt like when they did Romo's contract, they should have done a contract with Jim, a similar contract. I know, I've gotten some pushback, and I know publicly they've said some things, acting as if like everything was hunky dory. Okay. I disagree. Obviously they're adjectives, and these are the people involved, and they can say what they want, publicly. But they didn't go as smoothly, as maybe you'd think. Now, if you look at all my articles and especially the original article I wrote, where I mentioned the Romo money. I quoted Sandy Montag, Nance's agent, in there, where he said, how much value he had, Nance had to CBS. Look, at the end of the day, and in that original article, I think everyone felt that Jim Nance would stay at CBS, which is what happened. And sounds like they said a long time. They didn't say how long. There's, the exact details of the deal hasn't been revealed, it's in that range that the Buck and Tirico's are in, I've been told.
I mean, if you're Jim Nance, you really can't blame him for wanting, to get into that level. The guy does do the Masters, the NFL, and college basketball. A lot of times people want to, maybe call out someone who wants big money for being, greedy or something like that. To me, he's well within his rights there to try to,
100%. Kind of money. No, I would agree. I mean, first off, you're allowed to ask for whatever you want. I mean, you know, you can ask for whatever you want. And I mean, I think he did pretty well personally. It's interesting because they did give Tony such a huge contract, and Romo had such great leverage. It was right before the pandemic. Everything worked out for him. I go through a million things. We've done it on this podcast. I've written about it a number of times. So it worked out for him. Jim Nance is going to do just fine, but there was a disagreement in terms of worth for a while. Now, where they ended up getting to, I think that Jim might be doing the Masters into eternity. So that's ultimately I think is probably the most important thing to him. So everyone I guess ends up happy, and he's making plenty of money.
It is amazing in this world that we live in today, where everything is about younger, 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 youth, 18 to 49, whatever the money demo is these days. But when it comes to like the top play-by-play jobs in sports, it does seem like, it seems like the youngest guy out there doing it is Joe Buck, and he's 51. Like, you know, that you don't have 35-year-olds getting top play-by-play jobs. They get, you know, not the top play-by-play, but it is interesting where everything is so generated towards youth, and it's still, you know, Al, Nance, Breen. I mean, Mike Emmerich just retired. Did he retire last year?
After last season,
Yeah, it's an interesting, you know, dichotomy there.
Well, these jobs are so good, right? I mean, you know, you get these jobs, think about it. You're calling the biggest events. You're making millions of dollars. Now, I think people don't realize the skill level of anybody who makes the major leagues or major college sports in terms of doing these games. It's not like, it's not easy. Even talk shows, I think people underrate how hard it is to do a successful talk show. It's not as easy as people think. You know, oh, I could do that. I don't. People try, and you know, only some are really good and can really gain an audience. Yeah, I think ultimately you look at those, like you look at Al Michaels, like why would he want to retire, right? He does, you know, he did less games this year, but let's just say he does 18 games a year, you know, and makes millions of dollars, and then you're off from, you know, depending on the year, but February to basically middle of August. So that's a pretty good runway to, you know, to do both. So, I guess that's why, and they're able to hang on to it, and there's politics involved as well, so it's hard for people to break through and to have change. And I think it's sometimes something that always has annoyed me, because for all of our careers, the idea that, like, certain people can only do the big games because, like, it's like a chicken and egg thing where you associate that person with the big games, and so they can only do it. I think, to me, the people in charge need to be able to recognize who has the ability to operate and broadcast at that level. And then, you know, when they want to, if they want to make a change, they can. And it doesn't, it takes executives with little onions, to borrow a Raftery term, who know what they're looking at and have confidence. And, you know, a lot of them just rather just do the status quo and stay where it's at.
And you also have the issue now, you know, how much, if at all, I mean, you can make the argument it should be zero, but maybe not, is, you know, now how much should executives be listening to Twitter and what social media response is? I mean, they'll say no. I will never, ever believe that Twitter didn't have something to do with them booting Phil Simms at CBS. I think it played a factor. Now, the flip side of that is, I don't think you always should be paying attention. I mean, there, you know, like the Joe Buck, there are people who hate Joe Buck just because they think that's the thing to do now. So it's that's a very dicey one there on like how much stock you should put into social media reaction of sports fans when it comes to announcers.
Yeah, it definitely has an impact. If I were running something, I would look at it, but it wouldn't be my barometer. I just think you have to look. I covered baseball for a long time, the Mets, the Yankees. You know, I saw Brian Cashman, how he operated. I saw Steve Phillips, how he operated as GMs. And I just don't think – you just have to do what you think is right. Like, Cashman's thing always was like, you know, like people would talk about they need to bring in somebody to make sure they have, you know, a full house. And it's like, well, if we win, we'll have a full house. Now, there was a time, and you're a Yankee fan, when we go 2000, what's the 13, 14, 15, I used to say that Cash's goal was to make the Yankees – as boring as possible, like personality-wise, and he Absolutely. Is succeeding. And he's succeeding. Yeah. And then they got Glaber and, you know, and Aaron Judge showed up, and now they're an exciting team. But, you know, he didn't want the off-the-field, any kind of histrionics. But the bottom line is, though, with his core is correct, though, is you just have to do what's right by the team, and you can't worry about what the fans say. So I kind of think that applies to all business, is that if you know, if you feel like you're right, you need to stick with it, because we've seen things like, I mean, there's a million examples in a million different ways, from Conan O'Brien being terrible when he first started the Late Late Show and whatever it's called, and then it was amazing, to, you know, the quarterbacks. You know, Peyton Manning didn't have a good rookie year. He's one, you know, maybe the best quarterback ever, or one of. So, you know, there's a lot of examples of that. And I think if there was Twitter around at those times, you know, maybe there'd be executives who pulled the plug a little bit earlier than they should have and would have been wrong.
Yeah, for sure. Let's switch gears to ESPN. They've had an interesting week. And there's obviously there were two incidents, and I think they sort of tie in, because you had Herb Street blast Orlovsky for his reporting on Justin Fields. And then you had obviously Paul Pierce go on Instagram Live with strippers and I don't want to use the word substances, but let's just say he was smoking something. Didn't look like a cigarette. He gets fired and nothing happens to Herb Street. Now, I'm not advocating for... I made the point today, there are different rules for different people at ESPN. And I had a couple of dopes on Twitter push back, but it's just a fact. There are different rules.
100%.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a fact everywhere, though. I don't think
right.
It's exclusive.
If Paul Pierce was great at his job, he'd still have it. They would have suspended him instead of fired him.
Yep. Yeah, if he was Charles Barkley on the air, he'd still have his job. Yeah, that's true. I mean, you can go back to when... Now, there's a different regime. Jimmy Pitaro wasn't the president then. It was John Skipper. But you remember the whole thing with the headline with Jeremy Lin. You know, they fired like a $28,000 a year copy editor who was working at 2 in the morning. You know, if Bill Simmons did that back then, I doubt he would have been fired, right?
It's
no chance, right? So it's like, I hate that they do stuff like that. And that seemed worse to me than what you're getting at here. But, the bottom line is, everyone, they're going to treat people differently depending on their value to the company. And Paul Pierce was he was on the way down as it was.
Right. Well, that's the thing. So what I wrote today, because it just went up right before we started, so you probably didn't see it.
Second it goes up, I read it.
Yeah, so like Tony.
It's not even on the site. Before it's on the site, I read it.
I love that. So like Tony Kornheiser criticized Hannah Storm's wardrobe and he got suspended because he's Tony Kornheiser. And the one that I forgot about, which I would have written about, but it totally was out of my head. And then someone on Twitter reminded me, was Russillo had an incident with the law where he broke into someone's house while he was drunk. They suspended him.
Yeah.
So
go ahead. Sorry.
So my point about Paul Pierce is, do I think Paul Pierce was a great NBA analyst? No. Do I think people were watching anything for Paul Pierce? No, I don't think he had a big following, but it does seem a little unfair and a little harsh to fire the guy. For me personally, I want firing to be like a last resort thing in this day and age. But, you know, ESPN has their reasons, I guess.
Yeah, well, two things. Number one, I think there's a couple things. I read your column just so I could see where you're wrong, so I'm ready for this. That's number one. So, number
one. Was I wrong
or
right then today?
Largely wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, so different regime. So that's a Skipper regime. Now there's Pitaro. So like to say one was, you know, yes, it's ESPN, but, you know, different philosophies in terms of firing and suspension. I think when you look at it overall, I mean, a couple weeks ago, Paul Pierce was on the air and he had the wrong team winning a game. There's mistakes and there's mistakes. That's not.
I mean, Stephen A. has done that about 50 times. If you want to talk about incidents like that, where he
Stephen A. has done, he's gotten. I mean, it's not good.
He talked about a Chiefs. The Chargers?
A random deal. That's bad. But also, again, I'm not really defending it. It's kind of stupid because we look at everyone as experts. I look at them more as performers personally. But Stephen A. was talking. He screwed up. I mean, it's not defendable. But it's not. Paul Pierce is going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's an NBA analyst. They're about talking about a game. I really do think it's worse. I mean, Stephen A. was bad too, and it's funny. Especially because it's such hard opinion.
Well, I don't want to get into like what's worse. I'm just saying they are similar things where you go on the air and you have something completely wrong.
Yes, but of course. But then you add that with this incident, right? And this is the thing from covering like teams, right? Covering being a baseball beat writer, they might know. They probably, again, I don't know this. I don't know for sure. They probably know more than we did, right? This might not be it. This is what we know. And there's like a trend that you watch, which isn't good. And they'd already cut down his time a little. Now he still was on the main show, still on Countdown, but they'd already cut down his time. He hadn't made an impact, so I would tend to think they know more. And also, I was told this, and I think it makes sense. I mean, he put this out there. You know, like TMZ or somebody just
got this
video.
Oh, I'm not defending that.
It's like, okay, but he thinks that was okay. And I mean, look, I can see your point, and I agree with you. If it was someone who was more valuable at this point to the company,
that's
they
my,
would keep
yeah,
them. But that's not how it works, though. I mean, I guess.
Right,
I mean,
of course. But that's we're in agreement. You said I was mostly wrong, but we're in agreement.
All right, fine.
I just think they should have suspended him. There's what? April, May, June. 3 months left in the season. Let him finish it out. Fire him in the offseason if you've got to. There's no rush to fire him 3 months before the season. Suspend him for a month or whatever it is. Because it looks, again, you're firing him because he embarrassed the company, did something wrong, and because he's not valuable to you. And that last part is what's most important.
Yeah, but that's how it works. I mean, I don't know.
Right. So, you
know,
but we agree. You said I was wrong, but we agree. What the hell is that about?
Well, I read your column. I don't know. I could go point by point. We could call it up. I could do one of those. Was that Fire Joe Morgan, the guy used to do
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you don't have to do that. That's boring.
Okay, but the all right with the I go point. Oh, so good. We agree. I apologize.
If ESPN would have suspended him for 2 weeks, would you have had an issue with that?
No, I mean, I didn't really I did text with somebody on Saturday. I was out. I got a text of this Instagram, and I said, "Yeah, he's gonna." I said to the person in the text, "He's gonna be gone soon." I didn't know. Monday, or I would have looked into it a little bit deeper.
I guess what I don't like is I don't like ESPN using the fact that he posted it as the reason they.
I don't think so. No, I think the overall reason. Let me just make that clear. The overall reason was what was shown. You know, they didn't like in the video. Now, if I do think it would have been different, though, perhaps not definitely, but perhaps if he was like taken advantage of, like he did these things, right? But it was private. He didn't know. Instead, he said.
That's a whole different. That's changing the entire thing. My only point is, if Scott Van Pelt or Stephen A. Smith posted that video of themselves, they would not get fired.
No, probably not.
That's all I'm saying.
Who knows? I don't know what's going on in Paul Pierce's life, but you know what I mean. Like, there's, I don't want to cast too much aspersions or anything. I don't know exactly what's going on. That showed poor judgment, you know, at that point.
Well, that's right. As I said to someone, I don't understand if you're in a room with a bunch of strippers and you're playing poker, how Instagram comes into your mind. That's what I don't understand, but whatever. Based on your tweets, I got the impression you thought Herb Street was totally out of line in blasting Orlovsky.
Yeah.
Now, what I find interesting about that is ESPN went into like complete hibernation on that whole story because I emailed them for a comment, nothing. I reached out to Herb Street, nothing. They wanted that one shut down pretty fast.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's kind of like their MO these days is to decline comment on everything, you know, which I don't think is a good strategy personally. I think you want to explain yourself because it just makes it clear you're a public company. Like, you can't want to be ESPN. Even though they don't call themselves the worldwide leader anymore, everyone still refers to them as that. They are the biggest sports media company going anywhere, no matter how many people want to say they're diminished. And, you know, in some respects, they are with the layoffs and et cetera. But they're still ESPN. So if you want to be ESPN, you got to take it. So you're like the Yankees of sports media.
Right.
And so to me, it's always better to explain yourself. I'll go back to the Cashman. He's very good. It's just going out and explaining it and being honest about situations. I think when you aren't that way, you can't really complain about the narrative. If you don't want to have any on the record, part of shaping the story, don't come to me with complaints, you know, about it personally. So I thought Herb Street's wrong because here's Dan Orlovsky. We could go into, if you want, debating what he said and how he said it and was it wrong and wasn't right. I'm not a fan of anonymous sources taking down someone's character. I don't think I've ever done that in my career. I saw it a lot in baseball when, you know, people would do that, anonymous source that this guy is, you know, something terrible about somebody. It's like, put your name to it. So
I just want to interrupt you. Have you heard it? Because you have the sources you hear. Have you heard that, like, did Orlovsky get a talking to about doing that?
Barry Jackson first said that from the Miami Herald that they were spoken to.
I thought they were spoken to just about having like a Twitter tiff. I didn't know if Orlovsky's reporting methods.
I don't know this 100%, but I think there was a message on you have to be a little more careful with information. You have a voice. I think that's an obvious thing. Like where, you know, this is how things, we're kind of talked about social media. Somebody like tweeted that out. Right. And the way it was phrased, I think, kind of set the snowball of of how people looked at Dan Orlovsky's comments. I think you can listen to them and have a more charitable opinion of how he presented it. Maybe not perfect. He is ad-libbing. But my point would be, again, maybe I'm old school or something. I don't know. If I work at the same company, I'm on the same team as somebody else. And so I don't need to throw gas on the fire that was actually almost at its embers and was burning out and was over. And then he's like, well, Kirk Gertrude's like,
I disagree there. Well, the two things. One, total aside, what makes this really juicy for horrible people like me, maybe you, is that I love that this happened on the Pat McAfee show when 2 weeks ago Pat McAfee ripped ESPN for not letting their people go on his show. Like, that's such a great layer to the, I'm sure ESPN's PR people are thrilled with that, but I love that layer of this story, just to throw that out there. And then here's my, and see, the two, they're, so the Orlovsky, Herbstreit, and Pierce thing, what I find similar about them, and this may not be the case as much for the Pierce thing, when you are in a, when you are in something that is strictly a Twitter thing, which these two incidents were, if you just step back from Twitter for 24 hours, maybe 48 hours, it goes away because there are other people doing stupid shit that people are then involved in, and you are forgotten and done with and over with. It's happened a million times.
Yep.
Now, the Pierce thing's a little different because there's a video there of him. I mean, whatever. But Orlovsky, who likes to tweet a lot, and seems to be on Twitter a lot, if he would have just stepped back for 24 to 48 hours, it would have been over and done with. But then he's making, he's sending out all these tweets trying to defend himself. Then he's making a video, and which is what Herbstreit reacted to. If Orlovsky would have just let it just sit there for a day, it would have been over and done with. But then he goes and tries to do an apology justification video. And that's what Herbstreit said. This is absurd. This is ridiculous. Blah, blah, blah. So that's my only pushback on that on you.
I think that's what your points are well taken. I think when you're in the middle of the hurricane,
right, it's hard to step back.
Especially, yeah, especially like kind of race was involved, where you know people are kind of, you know, kind of acting as if Dan's racist in his comments. I think it's hard to not want to say no. Listen, let me explain it more without a.
But people don't want to listen. People aren't going to. You could.
You could lay it all out. You're right, but Jimmy, you're ever in that hurricane. I agree with you. When you're not in the hurricane, you can sit back and say, what you're saying, I think you're 100% right. When you're actually in the hurricane, though, I think it's hard just to sit back. And I guess my problem with Herbstreit would be, I mean, you know, he also looks, to me, it doesn't, I get it, like, you know, and I think he's been pretty good about it with the Ohio State stuff, but, you know, he is an Ohio State guy. I don't know that, if that looked really great either. It's like,
that's,
I just don't think, dicey, I just don't think, it's, I think it's unneeded. Like, I don't know why he had to, he felt the need to do that.
I think that's where his Ohio State fandom, well, not fandom, I mean, he went there, loyalty came in.
I haven't talked to him, so I don't know what his, like, thinking was. I just don't, I didn't find it, like, right, if you're on the same team. That's my point is, you're supposed to be on the same team, and I get all these guys, you'd be surprised, are threatened by this guy and that guy. I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but, like, not that he's really a threat, even though he's up-and-coming Dan Orlovsky, but, you know, a lot of guys want to, you know, take, you know, take a little shot if they can whenever they feel a threat. So I'm not saying that. I don't know that. That's why he did that, but I just felt like, I just think it's uncalled for. Like, if you're on the same team, what do you
do? That's fair. I mean, that's fair. I have no issue with that statement at all. I just think Orlovsky is too wrapped up in Twitter, and he has, like, if someone thinks Dan Orlovsky is a racist because of what he said about Justin Fields on the Pat McAfee show, no video he makes on Twitter is going to change that person's mind. So you're just extending the shelf life of the controversy.
You're right. You're right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, you're right. Like that's dead on. So there you go.
Herbstreit. I mean, you listen again. Me, I love seeing someone on ESPN blast someone on ESPN. It's wonderful.
Yeah, but I like it too. I can't say I don't.
You know, but that one was harsh. I will say that was harsh. Speaking of people who will just say anything at any time. Let's start with this. Do you think Charles Barkley will be back covering the NCAA tournament next year after he went on TV and said the NCAA was all sorts of things?
Yeah. I mean, somebody else. I mean, they're not taking Charles. I mean, it would be a mistake. Talk about you want to extend a story and make it bigger. You take Charles Barkley off with, you know, the megaphone he has to be on any show, anywhere, anytime. Yeah, that'd be a mistake. So I would think he would be. I mean, look, Barkley's entertaining. In my opinion, the reason he's where he is because he'll say what he thinks. you know, is he really, you know, I think he does watch a little more college than he previously did when he first started doing this and knows a little bit more, but, you know, he doesn't really know anything about college hoops, like in terms of in-depth knowledge of all these teams. I mean, probably doesn't even know the NBA at this point in terms of in-depth knowledge, but he has like that Al McGuire ability just to sort of show up at a gym, watch a game, and have insightful things and fun things to say without having to having to study every little thing. And he's, you know, like we talked about A-Rod earlier, where, like, I think you talk about, like, you know, the two spectrums of it. You know, Barkley can just talk off the cuff and is so calm and relaxed in doing so and confident in himself to do that.
This is really, really inside, and I don't know how many people that are going to care about this or even grasp it, but it, what I find interesting about him doing the tournament is, you know, half the tournament is on CBS and half is on TBS and TNT. And the Turner part of it, they know Charles, they're used to Charles, and we know that when Charles is on Inside the NBA on TNT, he often will not talk about sports and will get into politics. No, what I believe from my observations is that out of all the networks, CBS, NBC, ESPN, even ESPN, the one that doesn't want to go even near any of that stuff is CBS. And then he goes on, you know, during the tournament and says, you know, we're divided because politicians want to divide and conquer us. He thinks most black people are good, most white people are good, and it's the politicians that have caused this whole ruckus. And I imagine, like, the TNT people are just so used to that, and the CBS people are basically having a stroke when he says that.
I mean, yeah.
Because, I mean, it is, I mean, he's making that statement on a, you know, pregame show for the NCAA men's tournament.
Yeah, I mean, fuck, he's Charles Barkley, he can do that.
Right.
Most guys don't. Most people have to toe the line. And CBS is conservative, but most of the networks aren't going to really go at their, you know, the leagues they cover,
right,
et cetera. But yeah, I'm sure they don't love it. Like the whole Baylor situation, they never mentioned what happened before, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Jim Nance was talking about redemption at the end, and it's like, from what? They never mentioned, you know, the murders and rape and, you know, what happened earlier, which I don't, look, I thought, just to be clear on that, I got a tweet about, it's like, it's not that they just didn't have to, if they hadn't mentioned it, it's been 20 years. I mean, I think, again, I don't know if that's probably, journalistically, obviously, that's the wrong thing, but you could have gone with a different angle, but when you choose to go with that angle, and then it seems like a pretty conscious choice not to mention what happened with Baylor, I don't know how you can go with the redemption as a storyline.
Right. Although I do think every network would have made that decision probably, but I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe ESPN would have went there. I'm not, you know.
Well, it's not that going there. You don't have to go there, but then you can't make it the story at the end.
Right.
That's my point. No, you can't just decide, all right, well, that's the story. Okay, wait, this big story that's now the number one story in terms of your headline wasn't discussed at all. I mean, just the two don't meet, in my opinion.
Yeah. It does seem like, and then, you know, obviously we had the whole situation with the MLB pulling out of pulling the All-Star game. It does seem like that whole, like, you know, the people who don't want sports people to talk about anything but sports, it seems like that's all out the window. Now everyone, no one, now, you know, it's a free-for-all, basically. Talk about whatever you want. I mean, it's hard to do that story and not get into politics, so it does seem like everyone's voicing their opinion. I feel like people are voicing their opinion on politics even more now than during the election and before that. I feel like the cat is out of the barn. I mean, on one hand, you have people saying, I'm going to protest MLB. And then it's like, oh, look, there's 40,000 people in the Rangers Stadium.
Yeah, I always think that's great. Slightly, like, whoa, overrated, whoa, all that stuff. I mean, I just think people who actually like these things aren't really protesting it. Right? You know what I mean? I think the people who are on the fence, who may not watch already, who are kind of like, they might say, oh, I'm going to protest, but I don't know. I do think it's a difficult topic for these sports, for all companies and these sports leagues, and how to handle these situations, because ultimately they're businesses who want to sell things. And so regardless if you're right or wrong, you're pissing off people who potentially could buy things. And I do think you really have to understand the laws very well in terms of what you're talking about, and then be able to look at New York or Colorado and be able to really defend yourself you know, when people bring up other things, and now people bring up China and, you know, baseball, you know, everyone, you know, working with China. And so I don't know. It's like kind of it's a difficult place to navigate. I mean, ultimately, I always go, you have to do what's right in your heart. I feel like that gets you to the best place, you know. So and I, even if there's some pain to where you're going, I just think that's the best place to go personally. But I don't run businesses. They're a little more callous in general.
It was just funny. I mean, and, you know, boycott Coke, and like Coke is a huge MLB sponsor. That whole thing is like Coke is going to go out of business or something. Do you know why I think I read it yesterday. I guess they're not doing opening week doubleheader on ESPN for NFL going forward. What's the logic there? I love that doubleheader.
Yeah, well, I mean, you only get a certain amount of games, so they are going to do a Saturday, and this is going to be a part of the new deal, but they're getting a year early. The new deal is going to affect the following season, or the 2 years from then. 2 years from then. But the new deal, they're going to get ABC/ESPN is going to have that doubleheader on Saturday, last weekend of the season. So, right. And I guess their game tonnage up.
So it's a replacement.
Why? Yeah, again, I think for this year, I could be wrong. I believe that when they go back to the regular deals, that that doubleheader will be restored. But I would guess there's a game limit that they're, you know, these are the amount of games ESPN gets. You know, we prefer the Saturday doubleheader. They gave them that doubleheader in, you know, late December, early January, I think it is. Instead of the first weekend of the season. And, you know, it's not like, oh, just give another game. I mean, these games are so valuable to the, you know, you're taking a game from CBS or Fox or whatever, however that game gets there. So it's not like just an easy, like, just give them both. It just doesn't work like that. So no. I believe that's why you have the one and not the other.
Last thing, because I just saw it and then we'll wrap. I guess today is the anniversary of Jim Rome calling Jim Everett, Chris Everett. I mean, I'm obsessed with this. If this happened today, this happened today, I'm obsessed with it. I mean, you have a broadcaster call a male athlete by a woman's name today, you're done.
Yeah. Rome would be done. When he was just calling, you just don't do that anymore. It seemed wrong then. You know, the interesting thing about Jim Rome, and a lot of people listening to this around the country know this. I mean, he's bigger than Mike and Chris, I would say. You know, if you look at radio, I know in New York, everyone's like Mike and Chris, and they're icons, you know, as a team and local radio, but Jim Rome, I mean, he was, again, I haven't listened to Rome in a long time. When I worked down in near Houston, I listened to him a lot. And he was getting, back then, he'd get like 20,000.
You're saying biggest sports radio?
I'd say the biggest
host,
sports
personality
radio talk
of all time?
I would of say all time? So, yes. I would say,
bigger
yes.
than Dan Patrick?
Yes.
Okay.
Dan's more of he's had a very good career as a talk show host, but, I mean, Rome has done it since his 20s. And I mean, that show, you look at him, I mean, he was in his 20s, but yes, he would have been done. He also used to say stuff about WNBA players that wouldn't fly. And I don't know if he's ever kind of done an apology tour on that one. I know I read that he and Everett have never spoken since then. But yeah, that wouldn't go over well. And you know, that did hurt his career. I mean, I don't think, you know, it's not like that. It sounds like that elevated him. It made him more famous, maybe, but I think that ESPN 2 show went down pretty quick after that, if I'm not mistaken. And so it wasn't like it helped his career, and then he built himself back up on radio, got a show on Fox Sports with Wally Matthews, and it became his own show. And then, you know, he went back to ESPN and now CBS. He's had an incredible career. He's made a lot of money, and he owns his show more than the others did. So he's had an incredible career, But you're right. I am interested. If this happened today, what would social media be like? What would be the reaction? How would this gone over? And yeah, it changes everything.
I'm just thinking about it. I mean, that's like one of the biggest, you know, incidents ever. And that was without the internet. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that was
crazy.
Before clips spread, you know, so that shows you how big it is.
Well, that he was trending like on Twitter now, 27 years. I mean, it's not right. even like 30. That's, it's like 20, you know, it's like a weird anniversary, yeah. 27. We like yeah. the round numbers of the fives. And like 27 yeah. years, and it's like a big deal on Twitter. I think I find it interesting. He's never, if it were me, I would have reached out to Jim Everett. That's me. I would have reached out and said, hey, let's do this. You know,
like, maybe, I want to. Yeah, but maybe Jim Everett was like, you know, don't ever.
Yeah, I guess he did. But again, I saw Everett say it, that he's never, they've never talked. It seemed like he might have been more open to it. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't owe him anything. And yeah, and it's totally, look, a lot of these things that are not okay, I don't know. I think, Jimmy, you're probably like, they never seemed okay, right? Like, you heard him calling him Chris Everett. Like, how is that? And there wasn't a part of me like, that sounds right. That seems like like you should be saying that. I mean, it was sexist then, it's sexist now. I mean, of course, now there's just more of a focus on it and less tolerance.
But it's a stupid way that a lot of men, you know, argue with each other is, you know.
It is.
Not now. Back
it
then,
is,
I'm saying no
wrong.
One even thought twice.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I know you're not defending. I agree. No, I know you're saying it's a different time. Yeah, I agree. Like, I mean, I don't want to really get into this, but yeah, I think when you look at history and then you try to like say, well, if it was today, well, that's not, I mean, it's a different world.
Right.
So like,
right.
you look
you
at
wouldn't
things,
do it today.
Exactly. If you look
right.
at things from, you know, 100 years ago, it's, yes, we've evolved right. and we're in a better, smarter place, but you know, there might be things now that are going on that people are against that in 100 years, it might be like, well, how could you have thought that? How could you have said that? And I think people now would be like, oh, no, that's how it was now. So I don't know. I think the internet and social media, and you made this point very well during the Olofsky discussion, like nuance just gets totally lost, right? Like it's
no
nothing.
Context,
it's like
right,
no context. Even if you say it and then like you try to defend yourself against it. I mean, I've learned not, you know, whatever. If someone takes something the wrong way, like, right. you know, I'll, if I need to clarify something, if I look back at what I said and I didn't say it clear enough, yeah, sure, I'll go back. But like, you know, not everyone's just going to understand what you're saying. And you can kind of tell by the reaction if most people did or didn't. And I can't really focus on the people who just, you know, lack reading comprehension.
Right. I wish you were a wrestling fan because I would love to discuss the fact that Peacock now is editing like 87 billion minutes of WWE footage to take out offensive things they've done in the past.
Because like
that is a fascinating story to me.
But how do you, I don't really see how you do that, right? Like, I mean, because first off.
Well, listen, if you're a wrestling fan, you can name 10 to 20 things right off the top of your head.
Oh, I can't. I was a wrestling fan as a kid. I mean,
right.
Slick.
I mean, they had
Slick.
Roddy Piper wrestle a match in blackface.
Yeah. Slick.
You don't
Slick?
Need to be a rocket scientist to realize. What was that?
Slick. Remember the
oh, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
There's
yeah.
like a I mean, it was based all on stereotypes, the whole thing.
Right. Right. But again, I don't know. Like, so Roddy Piper wrestled a match in blackface. It happened. It's a famous thing. So now Peacock takes it out, but like, what do you think? It's not on YouTube. Do you think no one knows about it? Do you think you've erased it? I mean, yeah. I mean, listen, you don't want to promote that. You don't want maybe people seeing it now because it's offensive, but I don't know. It's not like it goes away. I mean, people know about it. It's there.
It's a difficult thing. Like, I don't know how many things they've got rid of. And like, I think you could, there's just, look, the whole, I know you like it a lot. I mean, the whole thing is based off of like, you know, basically, I mean, there's misogyny, there's sex, there's a lot of stuff.
Well, not now.
Yeah,
not now.
Not now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But for a long time, there was.
Right. Well, and then when they became a publicly traded company, then they got rid of all that
stuff. Oh, they did? Okay.
That's basically what happened, yeah. Okay. And they had to appeal, you know, now they're on Fox. They're, you know, they can't, you know, do what they used to do. And those days are over.
Yeah. So all those storylines are gone though? Like or they just got rid of certain, like, I don't know. I just look back
to the nothing...
80s and 90s or maybe 80s, I'd say. And that stuff was all stereotypes and sexism, misogyny.
All gone.
Yeah. Okay.
All gone.
Gotcha.
All gone. All gone. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I was going to say something about that. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on. It's been a busy time here in sports media.
Yeah,
you got anything
is.
coming? You got anything got anything cooking? You always have like a story that you...
Yeah, I got a couple of things cooking, but we'll see what happens.
Where's Mike Francesa?
Yeah, you're big in the, you always like a little, at the end, just a little
What's he doing?
I don't know, he's doing much. He's on Chris. You liked it the other day. I don't know. I usually like nostalgia, the two of them. You know, whatever people think.
Does the fan feel like they've stabilized things?
I think they do. Do you listen to the shows?
I listen to Boomer and Geo a little bit on Thursdays and Fridays when Howard Stern is off and not live. Little bit of Moose and Maggie here and there in the afternoon.
Okay.
And if Salicata is on, I listen to him. And other than that.
Gotcha.
No.
Yeah. I do think they feel like they definitely feel like they stabilized. Man. I mean, they're doing well in the morning. Carton and Roberts, I think they're going to win this book. I think that's pretty clear. ESPN even changed their lineup already a little bit. So they feel stabilized. It's different. They do talk sports. The people say they don't talk sports. That's not correct. But it's a different way of talking sports. They're not really breaking it down like Mike and Chris did and like shows did in the past. It's different. It's okay.
Yeah. All right. Glowing review. Appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll have you on soon. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. And let's all just remember, if you have a Twitter incident, just chill out for 24 hours.
There you go.
Be fine.
Like a little advice.
That's the big lesson.
You give a little Jimmy Trainer advice at the end of every show.
The big lesson today.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. And you guys can catch Andrew, of course, New York Post, covering sports media. Thanks.
Thanks, Jimmy.
All right, that wraps it up for this episode of the SI Media Podcast. My thanks to Andrew Marchand of the New York Post. If you're a wrestling fan, make sure you check out last week's pod if you missed it. If you let that slip through the cracks, we had WWE superstar Edge, who's in the main event at WrestleMania this weekend, on the pod. 2 weeks ago, Scott Van Pelt from ESPN in a very, very good episode of the SI Media Podcast. So check those out if you missed them recently, and subscribe to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast with Jimmy Tran. All right, that wraps it up. We'll see you next week. Stay safe and take care.